In one of Jesus' shortest parables, he talks about the father who asked two sons to go out and work in the vineyard. The first son said, "I will not," but later changed his mind and went. The second son said, "I will, sir," but then he did not go. Then Jesus asked, "Which son did the will of his father?" The answer, of course, is the first son. We can say no at first and yet still be found faithful if after further consideration we end up doing what we were asked to do in the first place. It's against this backdrop that I read this wonderful and unique story found exclusively in the Gospel of John that identifies the first action of Jesus' public ministry. This story, the wedding story at Cana, is not the only story from the life of Jesus that is unique to John. The first three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, share a similarity with one another and are called the Synoptics, or the Synoptic Gospels, meaning having a unified view. But John hangs out there, offering a completely different picture, with many stories only found in his unique account. The Lenten Bible study taking place here at Central Baptist Church at 1 p.m. every Wednesday, led mostly by Charles Konkin, can help you with some of those differences between the Gospel of John and the other three accounts. And our Lenten series this year, focusing on John's special witness to Jesus' ministry, especially viewed through the experience of several women. Some are named. Some are unnamed. But all of them are equally famous because of John's inclusion of their story in his gospel. So it's only right, it seems to me, that we will hear many of these different accounts through different voices, different gospel proclaimers, mostly women, who will walk with us through these passages and hearing these unique stories. As I consider the wedding of Cana for this sermon, I have one question that I'm focused on. What does this story say to us about Mary, the mother of Jesus? For, in John, this is our first introduction to Mary. If John was the only gospel we had, and we didn't have the other three, we would not know about the story of Mary and Joseph, or the angel's visits, or the special pregnancy and birth of our Lord. We would not have the story about the visit of the wise men, or the rush to safety in Egypt. Without Luke, we would not have a story about Jesus' dedication as an infant, or later his visit to Jerusalem as a child. In other words, if all we had was the Gospel of John, it would mess up all your Christmas plans entirely. Mary is not even named by John by her name. She is called throughout his account the mother of Jesus. Maybe that highlights her special role that she plays, or perhaps to distinguish her from all the other women named Mary throughout his gospel account. So it's even more relevant to ask, what does this story that you read and I read together say about her? The special woman who had a front row seat to all of Jesus' growing up years As much as Jesus is loved and honored and studied and followed, there are only some things that only Mary knows about Him. No one else, living or dead, throughout the whole history of our world, could ever understand Him or know Him more intimately than Mary, the mother of Jesus. And in this story, she is revealed to be Jesus' first disciple, the first one to believe in Jesus and to follow Him and do whatever He commands to be done. Judith K. Jones, whose book was the inspiration to me for this sermon series, points out, in other accounts, we find Mary present at the beginning of Jesus' life. But here in John, we see Mary introduced and present at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. And putting all that aside, I so love and deeply appreciate how John, this guy who is our first real technical theologian of the Incarnation, whose prologue many of you could maybe recite about the Word becoming flesh, and offers us the very first clear picture of this doctrine, demonstrating that before Mary follows Jesus, this one, the Lord of all creation, the pre-existent and eternal Logos in human flesh, the one according to the Apostle Paul, who is the new Adam, the re-imaging and refashioning for all humanity, this Holy One, begotten Son of God, will be a dutiful son of an earthly mother to follow her and to foremost do what she asks. Like the son in the earlier parable, Jesus first rebuffs his mother, suggesting that his unique talents and abilities should be held in check and reserved for something grander, something greater, something later. That what he came to do was not parlor tricks for such a pedestrian request. But then, upon further consideration, Jesus changes his mind and ends up doing her will, following the will of his mother. It's a human exchange each one of us can recognize. I won't ask for a show of hands, but have you ever found yourself in a position where your mother asked you to do something that you didn't want to do, but you end up doing it anyway? Yes, Jesus was tempted in all the ways we are tempted, yet without sin. And yes, I see you, Mom, over there, six rows back, right in the middle of the pew, a person who takes my sermons to heart more than anyone else in this congregation and may be prone week after week to say to me, "Remember, Mark, you said..." God knows I need all the help I can get. But I want to push this point a little bit harder. Doesn't Mary in this story help us reject a notion that a spirituality focused exclusively on sacred and otherworldly concerns is not a very helpful or meaningful spirituality? What good are grand and glorious gestures if they don't make a real difference in the here and now? Mary shows herself the most concerned for everyday people facing what would be an embarrassing and shameful predicament. She is concerned for the plight of this family and the fact that here at the most important event of their lives, there is no longer any wine. Now, if this situation was played out today on the airways and discussions of modern social issues, I can imagine how the commentary would go in this fashionable blame game against the desperate. Well, you know, it's their own fault for running out of wine. They shouldn't have invited so many people. They should have worked harder and saved more. They should have not spent so much on the wedding dress. They said yes to the dress, but no to the wine. They should have planned ahead. They shouldn't rely on somebody else to do for them what they should have done for themselves. Aren't you glad the modern day blowhards didn't write the Gospels? John's picture of the mother of Jesus, John's picture, is of a person full of compassion. I have to wonder, how much of Jesus's early concern for those around him was learned while sitting upon his mother's knee? We need more courageous compassion in the world, not less courageous compassion. Yesterday, I attended a campaign event, getting ready for the primary and the midterm elections, and I heard something that struck me totally as odd. It was mentioned how the United States of America currently lags behind the rest of the world by electing women to serve in national legislative bodies. So I went home and did what any decent American citizen should do. I looked on the internet. Here's what I found according to an article from April of last year. Today, there are 104 female members of Congress serving the United States government, including 21 women among the 100 senators and 83 of the 435 representatives in the House. That translates to 19.4% of women serving on Capitol Hill. How does 19.4% compare with the rest of the world? In the Nordic countries, gender parity in representation has almost been achieved. 41.7% of legislators there are women. In the remainder of Europe, the figure is 24.9%. Closer to home, the average legislature in the Americas is composed of 28.2% women. Sub-Sahara Africa legislatures also contain more female representatives than the U.S. Congress, 23.8%. Indeed, the United States of America ranks 100 out of 190 countries examined by the Interparliamentary Union, behind Rwanda, who have 61.3% of their government that are women, behind Mexico, who has 42.6% of their government who are women. You'll like this one, Deborah. Behind Afghanistan, who has 27.7%, and the United Arab Emirates at 20%. Are we a country leading the way on women who are leaders and excellent leaders at that? I think we need to hear from more women in our government, don't you? I'm reminded that the tradition of Mother's Day, today has felt like a little bit of a Mother's Day, began as a commemoration for the war dead from both the North and the South of the Civil War, mothers who had lost their sons to the terror of this conflict. Though it was awful, they knew they had to do something. And with a hope that no mother ever again should have to lose one of their children, their own flesh and blood, to the senselessness of war, began this holiday that we celebrate today with flowers and going out to eat. Today there are different types of war, where mothers are burying still their children. I'm encouraged by the organization Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. It was an organization that was holding a public event in Frankfurt at the Capitol Rotunda just moments before this week that senseless, horrific, and heart-wrenching shooting began in Parkland, Florida. I've wondered, why is there no Dads Demand Action for Gun Sense? You see, we all need a little coaching, maybe even Jesus, on how to make a difference filled with concern for someone else. And if Jesus needed that help, then what hope do we have? Robert Sins tells this story. Many years ago, the Roman Catholic Church wanted to record something of the life and ministry of Mother Teresa in Calcutta. For a number of days, a camera crew went with her in her journeys throughout the city. One day on the back streets of Calcutta, Mother Teresa came across a man lying in a gutter. He was sick and he was dying. It was a horrible sight to see. The man's body was full of running sores. The smell was almost unbearable. Mother Teresa stopped in her tracks, called for a basin of water, a cloth, and a towel, knelt down, and began to wash the body of the dying man. Someone off camera was heard to say, "I wouldn't do that for $1 million. And someone closer to Mother Teresa heard her whisper, "Neither would I." May God teach us to tell the difference between the bottom line, to not just be ruled by the profit margin, but also by the compassion margin as well. So thank you, Mary, Mother of Jesus. May we listen and seek to do what is right, even if at first we resist, because at the end, there is joy and new wine, the best that anyone has ever tasted.